If you were to compare the revenues of the highest grossing feature film in history and the highest grossing video game in history, you might be surprised to learn that the video game earned substantially more, 5 times more, in fact, than the film. Today's guest explains that video games are big business and their societal impact still misunderstood. She's Kimberly Wallace this week on Story in the Public Square. And welcome to Story in the Public Square, where storytelling meets public affairs. I'm Jim Lutis from the Pell Center at Selva Regina University. Alongside me is my friend and co-host, G. Wayne Miller of the Providence Journal. Story in the Public Square is an effort to study, celebrate, and tell stories that matter. To do that, we sit down every week with the best storytellers around, authors, journalists, filmmakers, and more, to make sense of the big stories shaping public life in the United States today. To help us this week, we're joined by Kimberly Wallace, the features editor for Game Informer, a magazine that covers the world of video games. Kim, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So I think that maybe some members of our audience might not be familiar with Game Informer. So for those, the uninitiated, tell us a little bit about the magazine.
Yeah, I mean, the magazine started off way when Funkoland was around, if you guys remember that place. And way, way back.
Long time
so
ago.
So like, that would be the 90s, yeah. And it kind of... Once GameStop bought Funkoland, then GameStop wanted like the magazine that they had created. So Andy McNamara, our editor-in-chief, was the one who started it up. And the early covers are pretty funny because you just see one about dinosaurs or something. Like we're always entertained by them, but it's gone now through the years, and the population of our readership has just grown to like levels we didn't even expect, you know?
It's like
7 to 8 million at this point. Yeah.
Oh, that's incredible.
Yeah. It's amazing.
It's monthly, right?
Yes. Monthly. So every month we bring out and the magazine tackles everything. We have reviews, previews of games, bigger features that kind of discuss what's going on in the industry. We talk about current news that happens, which gets kind of difficult with print, but we try to last minute, like before that ships, get it as current as possible. So the magazine, like I said, it's kind of a jack of all trades. It covers so many different areas.
Video games are big business though, right? So yeah. we were talking about this before we rolled. Avatar, the highest grossing movie of all time, grossed $2.8 billion. Space Invaders, the highest grossing video game of all time, $13.9 billion.
Crazy.
With that kind of money, do we take video games seriously enough?
Personally, I've seen it go both ways. Some people still consider them like you get like the lazy gamer, stereotype that goes on. But I think, video games have grown so much. I was talking to one of the developer, Ken Levine, who created BioShock, which is a phenomenal game if you haven't checked it out. But he was talking about how it was like film. Like, film, everything had to be invented. And he felt that's what was going on with video games. So we started with like Pong, things on the side. Yeah, Pong, right? Yeah.
We were talking about it last night.
You started with that where you're just like, okay, this is fun. But now we have games with like, full-blown storytelling themes, fully realized characters. Even so, there's also the social side of them too, where like games bring these communities together, people together every night to just sit on there and play some games and, get to know each other. It's been all over the place. I feel like we've had this social aspect going on to it now that we didn't have back then. And even just like the stories that games can tell now are just so much deeper. And it's still something they're figuring out. Like to tell a story through a video game is much more difficult than say you just have a movie sitting there because you have to constantly engage the player, which like I said, there's always kind of a battle between giving the player something interesting to do versus being able to tell the story you want to tell. There's always like, oh, well, we need like some kind of sequence here where there, you know, there's action or stuff. So, I mean, there's still figuring it out, but game storytelling has come certainly a long way since the inception of all the video game boom.
So Jim, of the two of us, is the gamer, and I'm still stuck back at Pong in a bar in Williamstown, Massachusetts. But for our audience and for people who might be closer to me than to Jim, what are some of the really big names in games now, the titles, in terms of popularity, sales, or however you would measure
yeah,
that.
Obviously, I'm sure you've heard of it in passing at some point. Fortnite's really big right now. Apex Legends just came out, which is giving that kind of a run for its money, which no one expected because it kind of stealth launched out of nowhere. That's by Respawn, who they were, you know, on the Call of Duty series for a while. And even so, the big games also, Rockstar just released Red Dead Redemption 2, which was big. They make the Grand Theft Auto series, so that's been a hot
that I've heard of.
God of War, in the last coming months, let's see. Resident Evil 2 just had a complete remake done that's really, really well done that people are talking about. You know, Overwatch is still big, Blizzard's game that came out, I think it was like 2 or 3 years ago, and I still play that game every night. So they keep bringing me back. You know, there's a lot to, like I said, I feel like games are working now to have so many different areas that they cover. And like, as we said, like now anybody can really be a gamer. I mean, you can pick up your phone and on your phone, you know, you have access to all these games that you can play also. And a lot of people use those too to like just calm down at the end of the night, you know, release some anxiety and tension. And it's just, it's amazing to me how far we've come with it. And also still have quite like a way, we're still figuring stuff out with it too, you know?
My son is a gamer, he's 25 years old. And he tells me of the excitement that builds prior to release of a game.
Oh yeah. The hype machine, they call it.
But that's, I guess, part marketing and part what else? I mean, it sounds like the build-up to a movie or a Netflix TV series is going to launch.
Yeah.
Are the same dynamics at work?
Yeah, it's definitely that. There's, like, we do, like, previews of games early. We have games on our cover stories to kind of give people an idea of how we think they're going. Also, within that, too, now there's a big thing with influencers who, like, now a big thing is YouTube and Twitch. People will stream those games early and let people see them
in action.
For people
who don't know, though, what is Twitch?
I'm one of those people.
Twitch is a streaming platform where, you know, you can just, it's, you know, now so focused on, like, video games in particular, where people just stream themselves playing a game and other people watch. It is such an interesting thing to me because my nephews in particular, they're young and they love to watch people play games. I didn't grow up that way. I wanted to be playing them, but it is something now that people just like the entertainment of watching someone play a game. So put someone on and they get scared, right? And you see their reactions or, you know, they make like some amazing feat in the game and you're there to watch. You're kind of like, you know, a cheerleader in that way, which also has made esports go on as well.
I was going to ask you about esports because this is a phenomena that I didn't see coming, again, because I didn't associate that anybody would ever want to watch me play, you know, Grand Theft Auto or, you know, Gears of War. It never occurred to me that anybody would care.
Yeah, right? Same. Yeah, that's how
But esports is a thing.
Yeah. Now you can be, like I said, Overwatch has the Overwatch League going on. There's so much within that space of just watching people. And these people get paid to just play these, you know, be good at these games. Go pro, take the people who are at the top of the league. And like gaming tournaments have been going on for a long time, but the rise in popularity in something like esports has just increased. Like the fighting game scene in particular is just huge right now. And they have like Evo where they have the competitions. And it's like there's so many areas to touch on it. So it's like.
So are there like star players that mm-hmm. other people like to watch?
Yeah, there's personality. Yeah.
It's crazy. In a TV series or whatever.
Yeah, right. That's like,
my,
it's like you.
My tune, girl or my gal or whatever.
For example, Overwatch League, like you tune in to watch the team that you want to support. So, and you cheer them on. And, you know, it's just as much as like watching a football game, right?
Can you bet on them?
Yeah.
Really? You could actually
there bet. Are places to do that, I'm sure.
And there are schools colleges.
Yeah, that, now they have esports programs. Yeah. It's amazing to me to see because, you know, like I said, video games and how they've been accepted into like mainstream society has changed so much since like even I was young, you know, like it was always this, growing up for me, it was like this niche thing that people just, oh, you like to play games, okay. But people never really got it, you know. Now it's like people are building careers off of it. Like even these people with esports, there's coaches. Parents hire coaches for their kids for like Fortnite and to get better. Yeah, it is amazing how.
But bad parent is the bottom line.
Well, not necessarily. It might be a nice parent. Well, a little misguided, but nice.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
It's crazy. Yeah,
there's
so much I think going on.
Do you have a sense of who's actually playing games? Is it the, you know, the stereotype? I think is sort of a prepubescent teenage boy.
Yeah.
Right. But what's the truth?
Well, that has changed. You know, the ESA, the Electronic Software Association, recently, like, they every year poll and find out, and they find it very close to a 50-50 between male and female ratio on who plays games. They also find that it skews actually a little older than you would expect, even though all these young kids are getting into it, too. Like,
I think the numbers that I looked up said that the average female gamer is 36.
Yeah, you wouldn't think that, right?
And average male gamer is 32.
Yeah.
And that is totally not the stereotype. The stereotype is a young male, you know, 15 to 30, maybe.
Yeah.
You'll even notice that, too, because if you go into one of these games that you have to, like, coordinate as a team, and you listen to your teammates, you can tell you have people of all different ages. Like, you'd be like, that's totally a kid there. But yeah, they're great. Or like, okay, that guy sounds like, you know, he's a bit older and has, you know, done this for a while.
So that diversity. So when I get on and I play, particularly when I'm playing not a solo campaign, but I'm playing with a bunch of people from all across the internet, mm-hmm. I'm acutely aware of my aging reflexes.
Yes.
I don't move as quick. I don't make decisions as quick as the 15-year-old who's burning through some level and I'm just like sort of running along behind trying not to get shot. It's the truth, right?
Yeah.
So when we're talking about esports, do they have that same sort of peak and decline?
Definitely. There is a huge aging out process because as you get older, your reflexes go down. You can't be at the top of your game forever. There are obviously some exceptions to that rule. I've seen people compete, you know, past, you know, the 30, but it's really not, you know, that as common.
There's like, no Tom Brady.
It's really
42
difficult.
Years old and yeah. Looking at another great.
Like I said, you get those outliers, but like in general, as your reflexes, even with me, I notice like, gosh, when I get paired, especially if I keep going back to Overwatch just because I play a lot of it. So there's like competitive rankings. And as you go up in the ranks, you find that your teammates get younger and younger. And it's like, it's kind of frustrating.
Because they're better
like,
and better.
Yeah, because you're like, oh, I want to play this game really logically. And they're, you know, they just want to. They're more out for, you know, them than a team sport sometimes in that case. But it's like the reflexes on these kids and what they can do. It's amazing. But, yeah, I totally hear you on the as you get older, it's not as easy. You know, it's even for me. I'm like, I've been playing games for so long. I should be better than this right now. But you're playing against these kids who that's what they do when they get home from school or, you know, when they hang out with their friends and they dedicate time to it as they would, I think, to when I was young and I played a lot of sports and like I would just go out and shoot hoops for a while and practice. Like it's kind of similar to that in a weird way.
Yeah.
And like I said, games are all over the place with the different like capabilities of what they can do. And we're seeing stuff with like VR, we're seeing people bringing games into like, for cancer patients as they're getting their chemo as a way for distraction because it makes them not focus so much on the pain. Burn victims in particular, too, they've used video games in that sense. So there are a lot of different areas that you're going on, like going on here with what they can do.
We need to take a quick moment for station identification. This is Story in the Public Square, where storytelling meets public affairs. An audio version of this show can be heard 4 times every weekend on Sirius XM Satellite Radio's popular Politics of the United States. That's the POTUS channel, number 124. We produce Story in the Public Square with an immensely talented crew of Rhode Island PBS, and we're lucky to work with them. I'm Jim Lutis from the Pell Center at Salve Regina University in beautiful Newport, Rhode Island. If you want to catch up with me on Twitter, you can do so at JM Lutis. Joining me as he does every week is my friend and co-host, G. Wayne Miller, an award-winning journalist with the Providence Journal. Wayne is also the author of 17 books. You can find Wayne on Twitter, too, at G. Wayne Miller, all one word. And our guest this week is Kimberly Wallace, the features editor for Game Informer, a magazine that covers the video game industry. She's on Twitter, too, at KSTAR1785. You mentioned earlier sort of the social component in all of this. And I remember at one point, since I got married, I play less than I used to. But in my 30s, when I was single, I had a sort of a network of college buddies, and we would be scattered across the country. But every night we'd all get on and we'd play Call of Duty or whatever the game was at the time. And I remember thinking at one point that this is kind of taken the place of the neighborhood bar, where people would come home, they would have dinner with their families, and they'd go down to the neighborhood bar for a pop. Instead now, they're strapping on their headphones, and they're booting up their Xbox or their PlayStation, and they're playing with friends that maybe they've known forever, or maybe they just met online. But this becomes their nightly ritual.
Actually, it does that, because that's kind of my nightly ritual at this point. So it's funny, because I that's what I do. I come home, and I just want to unwind, and, like, you know, I'll sit down and just, you know, hang out with some friends on the headset, play a game together, and that's what you do. It's like, it doesn't feel like it's abnormal at all, or you're not doing, you know?
But it's funny, though, that we have to so almost defend it or justify it on some level.
I don't understand why we're still at the point where we're, I just feel like gaming just has had a negative connotation attached to it since forever, just because it was this hobby. I mean, there are, don't get me wrong, there are, you know, video games are very powerful in that respect. There's also negative sides to it. You know, there are people who do get, like, really addicted, and it affects their schoolwork, grades, whatever.
Families,
There definitely are some negative sides to it. Like, there's also, you know, the social interactions. Sometimes there's a little toxicity going on there, because people are behind a headset. They're not face-to-face with you, so you probably would say stuff that you wouldn't normally say to somebody in real life, and people are, there's the whole internet troll thing, and that goes into the social interactions.
You know, and they all these games are rated, right?
Yes.
But they note that online play is not rated, and you hear a lot of bad stuff.
Yes.
And some of those.
What do you mean, bad stuff?
Racist, misogynistic.
Really?
Goes on and on.
Yeah. You know, too, just even for me, I find if I have somebody, like, we're playing a team game together and someone's, like, yelling in a headset at the team, like, it makes me play worse. I'm like, don't do that. Like, I need to be able to play my game, but, like, people try to dictate and control. And then, you know, if there's a loss involved with, like, you know, it's win or lose, and, you know, if you guys don't win, then the people take it very seriously, to the extent, like, because they want to keep their ranks up, they want to, you know, keep doing well, and it gets very serious, but, like, also just very angry at the same time.
So how do you counter that? I mean, that sounds like
it's something that they are trying to figure out. You know, it's something, too, I think of it back to when the internet first came out, and we didn't, like, know what the internet was going to turn into, or that we needed people to step in and kind of moderate things, or, you know, provide these. So now a lot of developers are putting, like, extra time into making sure that they make it easy for people to report other players. They have, like, some, there's even software that will detect, like, certain words and block it off, or, you know, ban some of these players. But it's really hard. They can't be there 24/7, and you can't always know what a person's actions are going to be in that heat of the moment.
And I think the individual gamers have some agency in this, too. So the guys that I would play with, we developed our own code for it's time to get out of this group and go find another one. And it was one of us would say, hey, I think I need to go walk my dog. And then we'd all know to back out of that game and reconvene back out in the lobby, and then we'd go find another server to play on.
Yeah.
But there's got to be some agency in that. Hey, talk to us a little bit about the role that narrative plays in gaming today, because it's so far different than Space Invaders or Pong.
Yeah. I feel like there's, you know, there's two sides to it. There's the side where people are creating their own stories in these worlds, and then they kind of author, you know, what they're doing throughout it. And then there's also these games that tell very deliberate, you know, deep stories. I think of the new God of War was all about a father and son. They changed it so Kratos had a son, and you saw how he would interact and what that relationship would be like. And it turned out to be a really good, nice reboot for the series, because previously all we knew was this angry, angry Kratos and didn't see a softer side to him. So they're definitely, God, there's so many games. I think of something like The Last of Us has one of the best video game endings I've ever seen. Because, and that's where you're in a post-apocalyptic world, and you meet this young girl named Ellie who you're trying to, like, save because she has the zombie virus attached to her. So it becomes, like, do you protect this one girl, but she also holds the key to the cure of it, but that would mean that she might have to not perish, rather, and not. So there's big dilemmas within these games, and then that game just kind of ends on such a different note from a video game, because we're always used to having, like, you won at the end, or you saved everyone. Yeah. And that ending is nothing like that at all. You kind of sit there and you're like, huh. And then you're like, do I like that or don't I? And I feel like that is kind of cool that we've become that. Also, choice in games, too. Like, games are now testing. You know, you look at something like Telltale, which, rest in peace, that developer just went under recently. But they helped this whole choice and consequence in games really rise up, because you'd be put in the situation. So they got the Walking Dead license, and they had you playing as a character who protected this little girl, Clementine, who's just adorable. But you would have to make decisions on, like, do you trust this character? If you have a choice between which character to save or kill, which one do you pick? And there, yeah, it just goes like that. You know, the Mass Effect games are notorious for letting you play either, like, a really good, like, heroic road, which they call Paragon, or Renegade, which is, you know, you're just a little more.
Is it too overstated just to say this is fantasy? Because it's putting people in decisions and in situations that there's not going to be a zombie apocalypse.
Yeah, right.
How do you know?
I'm just saying.
Have you paid attention to Washington lately?
But this is the thrill of it all, right?
Yeah, like, what would
you're
going to
storm
do?
Normandy. Yeah. You're going to storm the beaches of Normandy in World War II. You're going to face down the zombie apocalypse. You're going to defend the planet from alien invaders.
Yes. It's very much what the variety of what a game can offer and the different, like I said, places it can put you in. I mean, there's this whole, like, movement of something called, like, empathy games for, like, in the last few years, where people have been trying to put you in the role of, like, somebody who is depressed so you can understand depression. And they've done quite a few games like that, which, like I said, it's all about, like, the vastness of how many different experiences that you can have within these games and the roles that they can put you in. It's something that's powerful. It's also something that's really difficult to always do well, you know? And I think a lot of developers struggle with, too. It's like, how do I make this fun? But this is a game after all, right? But then it's also like, some of these games are making strong statements, and you know, at the same time, you have to be careful with how you portray that.
Well, let's sort of follow that. It's a great segue, because Wayne mentioned Washington, D.C. So politics in games. I remember 6-7 months ago, I finally discovered Wolfenstein 2.
Yeah.
Which is a clear anti-fascist message. But then I started reading some of the message boards about it, and people thought this was a criticism of Donald Trump. And they said, I don't want politics in my game. Just give me the shoot 'em up.
Mm-hmm.
What is the current status of politics in the video game world?
It is such a divisive topic right now. You have people which I kind of tend to agree with, like, you can't, everything in some capacity has some political undertones. You can't get away from it. If these games are telling these stories, like, naturally there's going to be some of that falls into it. But then there's also this side that says games are fantasy. Like, I go to them to escape reality. I don't want to be reminded of stuff that's going on. And I think, well, it's like books. You have options for what you want to read and, you know, what genres you want to tackle and what topics you're interested in going to. But there is quite a big pushback against it, because they feel like games are getting too progressive, or, you know, tackling stuff that, like, oh, they just don't think is valuable in a video game. And I think there's some, you know, I understand apprehensions with that stuff, because it's very hard to do this stuff well in a video game. You have all these, like, gameplay mechanics to consider on top of the story you're telling, everything else that has to come together. But I think as any like storytelling, like if we're going to move forward, there's also, you know, those topics are going to be discussed in some capacity. You know, there's no really avoiding it.
Mm. Are there any games that do closely parallel or are based on, and I'm going to use again, Washington, national politics, for example? There certainly are a lot of TV shows mm-hmm. that do that, and some of them are enormously popular. West Wing, we could go through a long list of shows like that. Are there any video games like that that you would go, yes, this is a game, but I recognize this theme, this character, this issue, this development. I have no idea how that would even be played, but
there's games that have more tackled it more in a historical sense of things that have happened. I think right now is an interesting time because I feel like that we don't, it's a hard thing to talk about some of the stuff going on in the world and keeping it, you know, obviously video game developers, they are also trying to get people to play their game. They don't want to like knock out a core audience at this. But as you look at Bethesda with Wolfenstein, for example, yeah. they used it for their marketing campaign, Kill Nazis. Like that was their big like push and they leaned into it. Like, this is how we're going to go about it and this isn't right. And, you know, I think it's so hard to take those strong stances in like any platform, but video games in general haven't really, I would say the indie games, the independent games have tried much more to include politics in with it. Like there's even games that I said are just like complete satire on Trump right now that you could probably find on Steam. No, not even a question to me that those exist. I've heard of a few as well.
Steam being one of the online platforms
yes.
for game players.
Yeah, for a lot of PC players, yeah, that you can download games. So it's not something that, it's a topic that's not going to go away, and it's a topic that's going to continually get, you know, discussed. I think the fear is people are like, well, are these other games that I like to play going to go away? And it's like, no, there will always be, like I said, that's what's great about the industry is there are so many different experiences to fit so many different people. And the industry is only like bloomed a little bit with that, with the independent game movement as well, because they've been able to tackle things that normally wouldn't be considered like mainstream or like, oh, this is, you know, something that we have to sell X amount of copies to be profitable on. So we're seeing a lot of that.
Kimberly Wallace, this is a fascinating conversation.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah, no problem.
Great.
She's Kimberly Wallace, Game Informer's The Magazine. That's all the time we have this week, but if you want to know more about Story in the Public Square, you can find us on Facebook and Twitter or visit pellcenter.org. We can always catch up on previous episodes. He's G. Wayne Miller. I'm Jim Lutis, asking you to join us again next time for more Story in the Public Square.